Support for Fresno Land comes from the San Joaquin Valley Housing Collaborative, hosting a 2-day summit September 10th and 11th in downtown Fresno. Featuring keynote speaker Dr. Manuel Pastor, the summit will unite community organizations, developers, and residents to discuss affordable housing solutions. Learn more and register at sjvhc.org.
Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. On this week's Fresnolandia podcast, we are joined by Diego Vargas, Fresnoland's education reporter, and Abby Ari, who is Fresno Unified School District's Director of Student Support Services. And we're going to be diving in deeper into chronic absenteeism, how the federal immigration crackdown is affecting attendance, and how Fresno Unified is trying to tackle this really big problem. First, let's start with you, Diego. You and Giselle Medina on our team reported this last week on this recent Stanford study that found that student absences surged in a lot of Central Valley school districts following the Border Patrol raid in Kern County in January. Could you talk a little bit more about what this study found?
In particular, the study focused on 5 different school districts. One of those, the lead pulp author of the paper, Thomas D., he did confirm, was Fresno Unified. And what he and his team found was that there was a 22% increase in absences after that initial raid, both in January and February afterwards. That's where they saw that increase. And even though it was only localized to those 5 districts, one of those, for example, being Bakersfield City Unified, it showed that there was this almost shockwave effect where this initial raid set off a bit of a wave of fear among the communities, not just there, but in parents and students as well, who have now begun turning to educators and adults at school and asking questions like, how do we manage through this?
In the study, what kinds of students did they find were impacted the most from this?
So they saw that increase be pretty consistent across all of the grade levels, except for pre-K and for kindergarten. The author, Thomas D., let us know that 2 of the reasons for that, there being a sharper increase in those 2 age ranges slash grades, is that, one, because of the age of those children, those parents tend to be more protective. So the issue of family separation becomes a lot more particular and emphasized. And the second problem for that is, if I remember correctly, because of these kids being younger, there's just more fear of going to these schools and not being sure of what exactly is going to happen. So it still ties to them being very young and there being a protective element there.
So, Abby, how does Fresno Unified define chronic absenteeism?
Yeah, so chronic absenteeism is when a student misses 10% or more of the school year. So we have 180 school days in our school year. If they miss 18 of those days, they become chronically absent. And there is not a way to become not chronically absent once you've reached those 18 days.
Got it. And do you distinguish between excused and unexcused absences?
So chronic absenteeism does not distinguish between excused and unexcused absences. Absences that are unexcused, that can contribute to truancy, which we often hear about being related to our educational codes and the notifications you receive and then potential meetings and hearings parents might have with the school regarding attendance intervention, but it can be a combination of either sick and class cuts that contribute to chronic absenteeism. It could be all illness that contributes to chronic absenteeism for a student, but it's just 18 days or 10%.
Got it. Yeah, and the only reason I ask is that it seems like those are 2 different problems potentially, and so maybe they don't you wouldn't address them in the same ways?
I think there's a few different ways to look at that. There are different ways to address truancy versus chronic absenteeism, especially when you look at absence reasons and potentially if it is a health-related issue, then of course that's going to have a different level of compassion or care, or how do we support you to be receiving your education despite your health concerns. However, if it's like unexcused absences, parents frequently calling out, maybe students choosing to not attend class on their own, that might look a bit different. No matter the reason,
we just want them in those seats. Yeah, we want them in the seats. Yeah.
There's a root cause there. And so it's really important to dive into the root cause of the absences so that we can better support our families, regardless if it's a truancy or a chronic absenteeism or both.
Certainly. And in your role, you oversee the world of absences, but also the world of mental health services. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why a lot of students are not showing up to school in light of these raids is fear. So how are they coping with what's going on politically and with law enforcement?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. It's like an intersectionality of both of my worlds, right?
Yeah.
So as I was addressing attendance in the ADA and just watching ADA decrease down the charts there in January, February, and March, simultaneously our clinical social workers and mental health teams on our campuses were gearing up and supporting our students, many students who are newcomers or have families that with diverse documented statuses, just increasing with fear, anxiety, stress, and beginning to address those supports. Our district also as a whole was able to establish some different workshops and ways to support our families as well through those difficult times.
Diego, what are you seeing in your reporting with how students are coping with what's going on?
From what I've seen through my own reporting and anecdotally speaking, we're just seeing a lot of more conversations being brought up by these kids, not only to their teachers, but to counselors as well. It's a lot of hard conversations about, hey, I might not be able to come to school. Is there a way that I can make up my work online? I'm not sure what the future is going to look like for me in terms of attendance. Well, that it can range from that to it can range from, hey, I'm not sure like what my life is going to be like in just a couple of days. I don't know if I'm even going to be able to regularly attend and see my friends. I think it's important to note that for a lot of kids, it's not just a concern about, hey, what's going to happen to my family, but also about their own lives and their own futures. If they have to step away from being able to focus on their academics, they're being hurt themselves as well, on top of their families having to live in fear and have these concerns all the time.
That's a lot for students to take on, and it's also a new role in a sense of teachers having to help students navigate this new concern. And Diego, I know you and Giselle talked to a history teacher at Fresno High School and how he's adapting to the role. Could you explain that? And then Abby, I'd love to hear a little bit more from your perspective as well about how teachers are changing their role to adapt.
The most major thing that we saw in our conversations with that teacher is that that teacher just has to adapt. They are being forced to adapt to an increasingly more uncertain climate in terms of how their students are going to be able to not only attend but actually be able to engage with that work. What I'm seeing at least is we're seeing educators step up to that, and we're seeing them having to flex and really use those soft power skills, being able to say, hey, I hear you and I want to work with you. That's what I primarily have seen. It's just a lot of these educators taking that to heart and understanding and being compassionate and saying, hey, I want to help you. Let's get through this together.
As it pertains to our school staff, of course, there are policies that we uphold, our board policies and administrative regulations that help guide how our staff are able to address different situations at our schools. And so there's that piece, but then there's also the other kind of component that Diego's speaking about as well, folks who, through their connections and connecting with community resources, are able to really mobilize supports for students and families. And that has looked a lot of different ways on various different campuses, including partnering, like I said, with other community agencies for educational workshops or helping families to have their documents prepared and ready. How can we create a situation where families feel prepared and more secure in uncertain times?
Are we seeing, I know sometimes we offer programs, but we don't talk about like attendance in those programs. Are we seeing an uptick in students using mental health services? Do you measure that?
So we do track students who come into offices for support. Generally, our staff, they do what's like kind of a brief assessment, right? If a student comes in needing support, so we're able to track that. We did take a look in early spring around if there were any changes based on the needs in our community and political climate. It did seem at some of our schools there was an increased need for maybe students who had a history of maybe being newer to the country or their family having some of these needs coming back in for support or adding a few more students to that caseload. We had a few of our schools, specifically some of our high schools, who offered some support groups for students. So that was a kind of a response to the need for students as well at those schools.
So even before we had this elevated threat of immigration enforcement, chronic absenteeism has been a challenge for the district. third largest district in California. There's a lot of students to mind. And just a few numbers for our listeners. So Fresno Unified's chronic absenteeism rate in the 2023-2024 school year was at 30.7%. That's compared to 20.4% statewide. And it has been declining from nearly 50% in the district at the height of COVID in the 2021-2022 year, but we're still not below or even at pre-pandemic levels. So this is a really significant problem, and I know the district loses a lot of money every year by not having people and students in those seats. Can you share, Abby, a little bit more about what are some of the underlying root causes of chronic absenteeism that we're seeing in Fresno Unified?
Yeah, so I think one thing that's really important to note is that it's hard for us to know why students are not coming to school if we don't have that communication from families. So that's one area that is really important to us and something we're focusing on a lot this school year is increasing that family engagement and reciprocal communication so we can learn the reasons why students are missing. Because sometimes they miss and we don't know, right?
Those are also probably families that it's hard to get a hold of anyway. And so what are the methods to do that?
The ways to
reach out to those families that are difficult to find.
Okay, so ways for us to reach out for families that are difficult to find. There's multiple layers. Many of us parents, right, you'll get an auto call, a robocall we like to call those, on if your student missed a day. But then also there's notifications through our parent square. We also have letters that are being sent out. And this year we're partnering with Everyday Labs that will be sending out chronic absenteeism letters, both texts and physical mail letters to families, notifying them of their students' attendance. Additionally, with that, there's an automated chat bot that also will be able to connect families back to us and our resources so that we can learn more about why our students and families are missing. Back to your question around why families and students are missing school, I think there's a lot of hypotheses we can have around that. I know that generally the most reported reason why students are missing is illness. And of course, I think that there's an element following COVID where families are more cautious about sending their kids to school and having their kids maybe be sick or allergies in public. Again, we've been really trying to educate our families that our policies are back to pre-pandemic, which is if you're a little sniffly, you can still come to school, and going with our normal health guidelines around the fever. Obviously, we want you to stay home, but it's not quite the same as it was during COVID. We'd like your student there. So there's that component. Additionally, the school setting and the environment for families, I think, has shifted a little bit as well, right? So since we missed so much school and we're out of the habit of coming to school, I think that families are more likely to also maybe flex in their schedule and miss school more often than they would before. And so that's one of the other keys that we're trying to work on this year is really helping families see how much their student is missing, maybe in comparison to other students like their student, so they can see. Because the data says that families believe their student's missing about half the amount of time that they're actually missing. So if you were to ask a parent, they'd say, yeah, my student missed 3 days this year, but they've actually missed six.
That's very true as a parent myself.
So that's an important kind of education piece as well. Hey, your student's really missing actually quite a lot. And every absence is actually, it's not only, of course, funding, but more importantly, your student's missing out on really important learning time. And we know that chronic absenteeism is a huge contributing factor to whether or not a student is reading on grade level and at target third grade, whether or not a ninth grade student is predicted to graduate. These are big indicators, and we know it's really important for kids to be in school, to learn, to be with their peers, so helping bridge that education gap too for our families.
Do you look at it geographically in Fresno? I'm sure there's places where they struggle with absenteeism, and there's maybe places that get students to school more often. Are there positive things that pull kids to school that you're identifying beyond just chasing parents down whose kids aren't attending?
Yeah, a few things. One is that we are frequently looking at chronic absenteeism through the lens of subgroups, right? Student groups who are significantly more likely to be chronically absent and trying to target our subgroups. So we've done some really intentional work around our youth who are experiencing homelessness this last school year, and we've actually had a really good decrease in their chronic absenteeism rate, it looks like, projection-wise, which is exciting. Also, we spent last year really focusing in on schools that are doing things well. I don't know if you heard of our attendance marathon, but we were rewarding schools for increasing their ADA at a quarterly and a weekly attendance competition. And in that, we found schools that are doing best practice work. Generally speaking, I would say that most of our schools struggle with attendance. There's a good layer of maybe 10 schools who have a pretty good ADA most of the time, but generally the rest of our schools are struggling. There's certain schools that are historically more chronically absent than others, definitely in different areas of our city. But it doesn't matter where those schools are necessarily, there were pockets of really bright things happening. For instance, we have a really committed and focused attendance team at Hidalgo Elementary, and they made a huge decrease in their chronic absenteeism this last year with intentional work around parent engagement hours. They had an attendance team that met weekly to identify students with needs and match supports for those students specifically. If that was a basic need or an academic need or a family need, whatever the need was, really matching those together. Also, we focused in and we partnered with Fresno High this last school year, and they spent a lot of time diving deep into their procedures and protocols at their school. And in doing so, they actually won our quarterly attendance competition, I think 2 or 3 quarters out of the year last year, out of all the high schools, making an improvement in their ADA.
Yeah.
So,
how can a high school improve attendance? It feels like that would be the hardest level to do so.
You got to persuade those kids to come to school.
Yeah, so
they're making their own choices.
Yeah, really one of the main focuses at Fresno High was mostly around shoring up the adult practices and protocols, and that helped clean up a lot of the attendance components and also putting into place how we were engaging with families on a regular basis. But additionally, the climate and culture makes a huge difference at a school. If a student feels like they want to be there, they feel like they belong, they feel safe, that makes a huge difference. And definitely there is a lot of effort into that climate and culture at Fresno High too.
I can speak to that. I had a student a number of years ago when I was still in the classroom who would miss for weeks at a time. And I asked him what was going on, and he was afraid of having a physical altercation with another student and had never brought it up to his counselor or anyone. And at a certain point, that was addressed, and we were able to mitigate what was going on, and his attendance brought back up. But you don't know until you ask, and you have to figure out, what is keeping you out. Now, in your answers, you mentioned a term that I think we should unpack for a second, which is ADA.
Yeah, so ADA is a funny term. It stands for Average Daily Attendance, and we use it regularly in our school district just to describe, on average, how much kids are coming to school. So if you were to ask your school, your student's school, what's the ADA of the school? It's going to be the percentage of students who are attending on a regular basis. But then fiscally, it has a different meaning. And that really represents a unit of funding per student. And so basically, the way that the state helps us fund our schools is connected to that unit of funding per student. And we get a full unit of funding per student based on their attendance. So if they come 100% of the time, then we get that 100% of that funding. And of course, our ADA, I think, clocked in around 90% this last year. Generally, we're shooting for a 95% as a school district. As you can see, that would be some missing dollars for us.
Okay. Talk about the importance of home visits.
Yeah, so we actually have, and I'm not sure if you've heard of this term, it's a homeschool liaison role in our district. And my team is very involved in the professional learning community for our homeschool liaisons, where we focus monthly in on using data down to the student-specific data to drill in, identify students and families that we need to be making phone calls and home visits, working through what those conversations look like, role-playing scripts on how to converse with families and engage them. Home visits are about telling families we care about you. I think that sometimes it can be scary, right? But that's really what they're about. It's about, hey, we miss you, we care about you, we want to know what's going on and how we can help so that you can come to school and your student can learn. And our homeschool liaisons are huge folks who do home visits, but it's not limited to that. There are many staff in various roles in our system who connect with the family in a deep way and will make the trip to a home to connect with a family member to see how a student's doing.
I know we had new superintendent Misty Herr on our podcast a few months ago, and she had talked about doing some of the home visits herself. And I'm just curious, how much does the person making the home visit and their own connection they may or may not have with the student matter in bringing that, building that trust with the school.
So I don't have any hardcore data on that, but I'm going to tell you from my personal knowledge
anecdata.
And experience is that relationship is everything. And so when you have a relationship with a student, of course, them knowing that you're the one who misses them and doesn't see them at school makes a huge difference. But I think also a home visit or a really great phone call, that greeting at the front of the school, those can all be those stepping blocks to build that really important relationship and can be the thing that joins the school and the family together. So it's both an opportunity for that and also a way for us to optimize our support to families is leveraging existing relationships. I don't know about you, but my kid will listen to a coach sometimes more
a thousand
than
percent.
Me. Mm-hmm. And so those relationships really matter.
Yeah. Can I ask you, and this is a broad question, we've been talking about pull factors, right? Like good teachers, like relationships. We also have SARB too, which is... stands for School Attendance Review Board.
Yep, you've got it.
How do you conceptualize the role that SARB should play? How often, I know it's not used as often as the other tactics, but it is used. So how do you think about what its role should be?
Yeah, actually we've spent a good amount of time over the course of the last year and a half, really, as some laws have shifted in California around the role of SARB and what we can and can't hold families to or not, right? But in that, our truancy laws still remain the same, and that we are wanting to meet with our families and see what's going on to try to support them. So we've really shifted our SARB hearing process to being strength-based approach and really focusing on what are things that are working well for a student or family? Is there something the family or the student is engaged in that's working well? And then what are the areas that are places we can help support and provide some intervention? We've added some follow-up and timeline processes to those procedures. And additionally, this next year, we're continuing to grow that with some improvement as we are engaging more with our community partners to be involved in that process as well, to really wrap families around with support when they get to that level. Generally, our families who reach a SARB level, there's a lot going on. It's very complex situations, and it's not just that the student doesn't want to go to school or that the family doesn't like school and doesn't think it's important. There's so much to it, and they really do actually want their student to be learning and successful. It's just so many barriers.
I can talk about one structural barrier, and I'd be curious to understand the district's response. So my daughter was diagnosed with asthma last year, but it went undiagnosed for a long time, and so we held her home all the time because she was constantly sick, and when she wasn't being held at home, she was fighting and didn't want to go to school and just like really tired. We had no idea it was asthma, no clue. And we got like the truancy letter from her school. And we're like, we're good parents. We shouldn't be getting this letter. And now that we knew what it was and it's diagnosed, it's not a problem at all. She goes to school fine. But there's so many kids in this city that deal with asthma. Mm-hmm. That's probably a lot of it. It takes a bit to get diagnosed. And so how does the district think about supporting people who have chronic health conditions? And that's like a huge barrier to getting to school.
Yeah. So that's a tough one because still, right, the absence laws apply. And so of course, if there's a doctor's note provided, that does make it an excused absence, and that will help you to not receive a truancy notice. But at that time, it was an undiagnosed medical condition, and so you only had as many doctor's notes as you got, and there were other days you made a decision, and it turned into a truancy sort of situation. I know that historically I have done some partnering with our health services department around asthma screening and support at schools, and that's something that I think is a continued pathway, especially in our area. There's a few other health conditions too that are pretty big in our area that are important for us to address. But I think the important part there too is really that communication with the school site so we can figure out how we can support, because what are some other
options? It's a flag. We are noting that you are not here and we need to address this a certain way with the right tiered service.
And how can we, is there a way that we can help bridge that educational gap?
Yeah.
Is there sometimes options for different learning settings or different options within our school system that help to bridge that gap from home to school for learning when we know we have absences coming up?
That makes sense. What doesn't work? What has the district tried that doesn't work to address absenteeism?
Oh, gosh. But I started off as a school social worker, right, at a school. And so I was the one out there doing home visits on a regular and out with families and that sort of thing. I think any time that we're doing anything to somebody and not with them, doesn't work very well. So if we are walking alongside a family, even if they just don't want to come to school, but if coming from a place of compassion and empathy and understanding, putting yourself in their shoes, that equips us to be a better partner with students and families versus, of course, if we're saying like, hey, here's the brochure of all the things you're not doing right, fix it and come back, it's a real different approach. There's a lot of other things that we've tried over the course of the years that work or don't work, or we think are going to work really well, and we don't end up seeing a huge lift. I think even to speak to that, I mentioned our attendance marathon and competition. It did a lot for climate. It did a lot for momentum. It did a lot for motivation. But at the end of the year, we still didn't make that huge of an ADA gain, even though we had put a lot into that effort. But there were other mitigating factors that we couldn't control that came into play as well that could have impacted it. So it's a difficult thing to notice. I would say that it's a huge interest of ours to know, especially why maybe students and families are leaving our district. And so that's something that we're trying to hope to integrate into our practices to learn more about as well, so that we can design our approach around some of those areas.
Do you think there's a connection between absenteeism and families leaving the district altogether?
My personal hypothesis at this point is also rooted in the COVID land.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to that. I think that the options for schooling, folks have a different idea of what that can look like for their family, and that has an impact. I'm not going with the traditional route. Similarly, I think folks kind of have a different viewpoint of how much school their child can miss or not, or what's a good reason or not to miss. And so I think there is those pieces there. You noted earlier data-wise, right, like our pre-pandemic chronic absenteeism was still not great, but it was substantially better than it is right now. And we have, like you mentioned, made some incremental change from COVID down back to, we landed this last year at 29%, which was a decrease of about 1% from the year before, but the year before that, it was a 5% decrease. So how do we get a larger decrease in our chronic absenteeism moving into this next year? And some of that might take us being creative about what that looks like and learning really from our families why they're not coming and why maybe they're exploring other educational options.
We always close these podcasts in the same place with what we're loving this week. I'm going to go ahead and go first because I have a weird one. So there's a chef that ran a Michelin star restaurant that is getting into the cat food business. And she is convinced that we should not give our animals food that we wouldn't eat. And so she made a cat food. It's called Catkin, is the company she works with. And she converted it into a burger that she then ate.
And I have a look of horror on
and
it.
And as a statement to say that we feed our cats so poorly, that's why a lot of them can be unhealthy. And so I just love the concept. I have pets. I'm like, my pets have shrines at home, worship the animals. And it's just a funny concept of like, where is this all leading? To a Michelin star chef making cat food, or where are we headed?
Oh, my word.
So here's my question, Donnie. As a cat owner, would you eat a burger made from cat food?
No.
Okay. It's a mental
it's
block for you?
It's repelling. I don't know. Just no. My sisters used to go to their friend's house when we were kids and eat cat food for snack, which I always found to be horrifying. And I'm like, no.
What are you loving this week?
I spent this last weekend up at Courtright Reservoir, which is one of my new favorite spots. And it's pretty high Sierras. It's like at, 8,200 feet? It's just beautiful. It's stunning. I have no...
Do you hike up there? You go in the reservoir? What are you doing? Are you just sitting by the fire enjoying the scenes?
I'm just enjoying the scenery. The drive is really beautiful because you drive to Shaver, basically, then you have to go another almost hour. Gosh, what direction would that be? East of Shaver? So it's a long drive to get there. And so Friday night, I was with my kids. We were just listening to a combination of either Taylor Swift or K-pop Demon Hunter soundtrack. the entire way and just like with the windows down through the trees. And it like that Friday night
sounds meditative.
It was meditative. And we were all just in our elements taking in the scenery. Every once in a while we'd stop and be like, oh my gosh, look at the view. Oh, it's amazing.
Was there thunderstorms because of that humidity phase last weekend? Oh, so you saw some stuff.
We had to ride out the thunderstorms. So that was a journey. Got a little wet. But then, and then there was a fire that was sparked on Sunday afternoon,
oh,
which
no.
is awful. So
that's awful.
I know. Hopefully it doesn't burn.
Okay. Diego, what are you loving this week?
So this weekend, I actually went to Pismo Beach and Avila Beach to escape the triple digit
Good job.
Heat. So what I'm enjoying is editing photos that I took during that weekend. There was just this weird fog that creeped in from the ocean that just would not let you see out into the horizon. But it blocked out more of the sun and made it a lot more chilly. But for me, that's fine. As somebody who's from Illinois, I don't mind that 60, almost high 50 degree weather. So I was in my element. Meanwhile, everybody else was getting off the beach, but I was thoroughly enjoying the weather.
Abby, what are you loving this week?
Okay, so I had two things come to mind. I don't know if that's allowed.
You can have two.
Okay, one is I got to spend the first and second day at Hoover High School this last week, and I was loving their vibes. In the morning, the music was playing as students were coming into campus, and there were students walking around with boxes of donuts, passing them out to any kid who wanted one, and that was a really great environment to be welcoming our students back to school. And then personally, I am loving seeing all of my own children back in their element. We started off the school year and we've got football and soccer and dance and swim, and it's lovely to see them all doing the things that they enjoy and being engaged and social and having a good time.
Thank you again for joining us, Abby. We really appreciate having you here.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.